He's good. But we're going to look at Genesis chapter 1 today. And I just will let you know that this passage is fraught with off-ramps that I can take. Trust me, you don't want me to take them all. Last week was called the God Sermon. This week we're going to call this the Creation Sermon. And to be clear, there's a whole lot more about creation that the Bible affirms that I'm going to be able to get to. Also, we need to understand that we bring questions to the subject of creation that the Bible is not interested in answering. And when we force an answer upon it because we want there to be an answer, we can find ourselves believing some foolish and some erroneous things that we don't really need to lean into. Without getting into the debate, let me say this. The Bible does not try to answer how old the world is. The Bible doesn't try to tell us if the earth is 6,000 years old or if it's billions and billions of years old. I'm not entering into that discussion because, to be honest with you, the Bible doesn't even try to answer that. But for a lot of us, it's very important that it does. And so we will find ourselves resting in questionable areas, and we will explain some things that are true away in order to make our theory fit. So what we're going to do is we're going to look today, and we're going to kind of approach this subject. And actually, as we go through Genesis chapter 1 through Genesis chapter 11 over the next several weeks, we're going to do everything we can to be humble and not demand that the Bible say more than it says. But at the same time, it is important, loved ones, that we affirm everything that the Bible affirms. It's important. We can't back away from it, even if society disagrees with us. We ought not to find ourselves shamed by our convictions because they conflict with the prevailing convictions of the world. I will tell you this. Our understanding of all things that exist and the why they came into being and their purpose for being is stronger than any other worldview that exists. And so when we say something that those who are elites and those who are in position of political or maybe educational authority sneer and look down their noses on us, we are the ones who ought to feel sorry for their blindness, because the God of this world has blinded them to what is true. And they are deceived in their understanding. And being blinded and deceived to what is true, they are compromised in their ability to live in this world in a way that truly will work for the thriving of the world. We have to affirm everything that the Bible affirms with a spirit of humility. Failure to do so results in foolish error. Failure to affirm everything that the Bible affirms with humility will bring us to a place where some things that are... Can we say this about the society in which we find ourselves right now? Some of the things that are being taught and believed in creation, about creation in 2022, are just rank ridiculous. It is absurd. And we know this to be the case, but sometimes we kind of act as if we're on the defensive, right? And I'm going to avoid a detour here and try and move forward. Failing to affirm everything that the Bible affirms will result in foolish error. It will result in a sinful drifting away from the revealed truth. Because when we live outside of revealed truth, we will find that our souls are being destroyed. It is harmful to the path of blessing. For when we live outside what is true, it is destructive, not just for our own lives, it is destructive for our society. And I imagine that every one of us over the last several years or the last several decades have looked at decisions that society is making. And we're going, how come society, how come our country, how come our world has a death wish? They don't have a death wish. They're simply blinded to what is true by the God of this age. And being blind to what is true, they are incapable in many ways of following on the path that leads to life. So we're going to look at four affirmations, only four today, that are found in Genesis chapter 1. And they are these. Genesis chapter 1 affirms that there is a creator God. Genesis 1 affirms that there is a created order that includes differentiation. Genesis chapter 1 affirms that creation is specific and it is special. And then finally, we're going to look at a fourth affirmation from Genesis chapter 1, and that is there is a goodness to the created order. And my prayer is that as we process through this, not that you're going to be inspired, maybe you'll be inspired, but my task today is not so much to inspire you, but to remind you what you believe and to give you anchoring thoughts that will help you that will enable you to resist the push against those things for your own good and for society's good. So let's start with this. Genesis chapter 1 affirms that there is a creator God. There is a creator God. We make no apology for this conviction. We find it in Genesis chapter 1, verses 1 through 3. We find it again, Genesis chapter 1, verse 31. And then we find it again at Genesis chapter 2, verse 1, as well as elsewhere in the Bible. But the passage says this, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now the earth was formless and empty. Darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. And God said, 'Let there be light.' And there was light." And that order of things continues throughout the book of Genesis in chapter 1. And then in verse 31, we come to this language. "God saw all that he had made, and it was very good." Chapter 2, verse 1, "Thus the heavens and the earth were completed in all their vast array." Here is what the Bible affirms about God's creation of the universe. God created the entire universe out of nothing. It was originally very good, and he created it to glorify himself. The Latin term for out of nothing is ex nihilo. He created it out of nothing. It wasn't like God was the United States government who decided it wanted to build the largest office complex in the world, and so it got all the supplies in order to make the Pentagon and got them on the pad site. And then God began to go, "All right, we need to dig a foundation. And then we need to lay footers. And then we need to, and then we need to, and then we need to." And God the Father and God the Son and God the Holy Spirit looked amongst themselves and says, "Thank God we got all the stuff here." He created it out of nothing, ex nihilo. He spoke and things came into being. But loved ones, when I said if we move ourselves away from this understanding, we believe some foolish things. And I want to say that it is foolish, the notion that if you have some supplies, disorganized at that, and you have an unlimited amount of time, they will fashion themselves in more orderly and more orderly and more orderly and more orderly ways. Moms and dads, how does that work with your kids' rooms? Just give it some more time. It's coming around and it's going to be glorious at some point. "But I don't have billions of years." Well, just give it a billion years. Here's what we know is the case. Had the United States government got all the supplies in every way that was needed to build the Pentagon, got it right there and left it, it doesn't matter if we have billions and trillions and millions and gazillions of years, the Pentagon will never be built. Left to itself, things fall apart. It doesn't matter how much time you get it, right? And so it's a foolish notion that this world and everything in it, it is a foolish notion to believe that time time will create in the human body a single strand of DNA. You know, or maybe you don't know, but a single DNA is able to code and to hold more information than all the recorded information in the history of the world. A single strand of DNA has that capacity if you were to turn it into a computer. We can't create a computer to hold all that information, right? Maybe someday we'll come to that process. But at this point, we don't. And there are people in this world who are convinced that this single DNA and everything else that is a part of this body and your body and everything that is complex about the world in which we live in just happened because there was enough time. I'm telling you, that's foolish. Out of nothing, without supplies, God created everything that is by the word of his power. We read 8 times in Genesis chapter 1, and God said, relating to creation. And whatever God said, whenever he said it, what he said and when he said it, it came into being. Revelations 4 chapter 11 affirms this. It says, you are worthy, O Lord and God, to receive glory and honor and power. Now, there's something from back in the day. For you created all things, and by your will they existed and created. Psalm 90, verse 2. Before the mountains were brought forth, or ever you had formed the earth, from everlasting to everlasting you were God. So in Genesis chapter 1, we see God making the universe out of nothing. And so the Bible affirms that other than God, nothing in this entire universe is eternal. Not you, not me, not this building, not our planet, not even the heavens. Nehemiah chapter 9, verse 6 makes this observation. You are the Lord, you alone. You have made the heaven of heavens, with all their hosts, the earth and all that is on it, the seas and all that is in them. And you preserve all of them, and the host of heaven worships you. So here, Nehemiah is affirming that in the beginning, God existed before he said, let there be light, before he created the heavens, before he created the angelic beings that inhabit the heavens. So what? So what, Pastor Brian? I'm glad you asked. If we want to know who we are, and that's one of the foundational questions of all of us, if we really want to know who we are, we must have an understanding of where and who we came from. Furthermore, in having this understanding of who we are and where we came from, our understanding of where we fit in this glorious universe is increased. Absent an understanding of who we are, where we came from, why we exist, we are milling about, bumping into wall, falling down, stumbling, getting ourselves up, brushing ourselves off, falling down again because we lack understanding where we came from. We lack understanding of how we are fashioned. And that brings us to our next point. The book of Genesis chapter 1 affirms that there is a God of creation who created all things that exist. The second affirmation is about the created order and the differentiation that exists within it. We're going to see this as we walk through Genesis chapter 1. God created, and as he created, his creation proceeded in a very orderly fashion. It wasn't willy-nilly. It wasn't spastic. It wasn't ebb and flow. It was orderly from beginning to beginning. And so we have 6 days of creation. On day one, God created night and day. On day two, God created the sea and the sky. On day three, God created the lands and the plants. On day four, God created the sun, the moon, and the stars. On day five, God created the fish and the birds. And on day six, he created the animals and mankind. But if you're to take these 6 days of creation and you put them into 2 columns, column 1, day 1, 2, and 3, and column 2, day 4, 5, and 6, you will see the order even more clearly. You will see continuity between day 1 and day 4, day 2 and day 5, day 3 and day 6. For on day 1, he formed. Each day he formed and then he filled. On day 1, he created night and day. On day 4, he created sun and moon and stars. They go together. On day 2, he created the sea and the sky. On day 5, he filled the sea with fish and the sky with birds. On day 3, he created the land and the plants. And on day 6, having formed a place for animals and mankind to live, he created day 6, animals and mankind. It's there for us to see. Creation, loved ones, is orderly. It is thoughtful. It has symmetry. Because our God is a God of order. He is thoughtful. There is a symmetry. That is, there is a beauty to how he acts. So, creation has been created orderly. Within this ordered creation, there is differentiation. In verse 4, God separates the light from the darkness. In verse 6, God separated the waters from the waters. And if you're taking a look at it, to be honest with you, this is one of the most difficult passages in the Hebrews. And it's resolved in one of 3 ways. One I reject. But the simplest way is, you know, the clouds hold water above the firmament, and then water gathered below. Verse 9, God gathers the waters in seas and lakes and oceans, letting dry land appear. Differentiation. In verse 11, we see that he creates grass and other vegetation and plants and trees and roses and dahlias and tulips and crocuses and Spanish oaks and live oaks, and the oak with a yellow ribbon tied around it. In verse 14 and 16, he gives lights that are differentiated between the lights of day, which would be the sun, and the light that governs the night, which is the moon and the stars. In verse 20 and 24, we see conscious and unconscious life coming into being. In verse 26, we see life created in his own image. That is humanity. Genesis 1 affirms that there was both order in creation, and within this order there is specific differentiation. So what? Does this mean anything? Is this important? Yes. Oh, it is undeniably and unexplainably how valuable this is to our understanding. The importance of these things is found in them being truth. Truth that grounds us in our understanding and therefore of our treatment and attitude towards all that is in creation. When you stand at the Grand Canyon and you see its majesty, when you stand before mountains and you see their majesty, when you stand at the oceanside and you hear the waves and you behold their beauty, when on a stormy night you hear the rolling thunder, when you are in the delivery room and the doctor hands you your firstborn child and your secondborn child, and for some people your 10th and 11th and 12th born child, God bless you. That never gets old. It is having an understanding that God created everything that exists with order and with a beauty that is all their own, that allows us to stand at the canyon and praise God for canyons, and stand at mountains and praise God for mountains, and to stand on a prairie in Kansas and be amazed at the vastness, to behold your child. You want to thank somebody for that. Some guys will say, I did that. We were with a couple friends of ours yesterday, young couple. She's pregnant with three. And he and the whole comment say, no, if we want to have a nine, I only have to do this two more times. And Amber looked to David and said, you? If a canyon is a mountain, is a prairie. If a primate is a primate, is a primate. If a boy is a girl, is a woman, is a man, that there is nothing special about any of us as we exist. You can't look at your little dollar and say, sweetheart, there is something special about you that that smelly boy over there can never rise up to. And at the same time, that smelly boy who is that sweetheart's little brother, you can go to that little smelly brother, said, son, there is something about you that is uniquely wonderful and glorifies God as you exist right now. You glorify God and show him off as being the boy that you are, the lovely boy that you are, in a way that your sister can't glorify him. But he has his thumbprint all over her as well. She is special and unique and glorifies God in a way that you can't. And everything in our society is trying to erase the differences. And if nobody's different, then nobody is special. It's important. If nothing is special about any one thing, which prompts our third point. The third affirmation from Genesis chapter 3 relates to specific and special creation. I alluded to the specific part because there's a difference between boys and girls, which until 10 years ago wasn't controversial. But sadly, it is controversial, and I'm not waging the battle here. I'm not with anger. This is a brokenhearted statement. That we live in a world that is so confused by where it came from and who made it that we cannot stand with confidence and say, boys are wonderful. Girls are wonderful. Men are wonderful. Ladies are wonderful. Children need a mother and a father to best position themselves to thrive in this world. If you say that and you are employed in some secular institutions of higher education, you will lose your job. It's insanity. But it's not causing within us a anger towards individuals who are blinded by the God of this age. It causes us to gear ourselves up with the armor of God and wage a spiritual warfare. That truth will win. The third information relates to specific creation and special creation. When we talk about specific creation, we see that in verses 11 and verse 12 and verse 20 and verse 24, each of these verses affirm that God created things that multiplied after their kind. Let's read verse 25 that kind of sums this up best. And God made the beasts of the earth according to their kinds, and the livestock according to their kinds, and everything that creeps on the ground according to its kind. Previously in verses 11, it talked about ferns that reproduce after their kind and trees that reproduce after their kind. It's no accident that plants and animals reproduce according to their kind. In verses 11, 12, 20, and 24. For what we read in verse 25 makes it crystal clear that God made each of these things specifically to do so. It is a part of who they are. It is a part of what they are as the created things and the created things that they are. It would be a wild thing to find yourself in the barn as a cow was giving birth, to have the cow give birth to a crow. It never happens. It has never happened. And no matter how much we want to erase the differences, everybody who denies these things all anticipate that when a cow gives birth, it's going to give birth to a cow. When a pig gives birth, it's going to give birth to a pig. Those of you cat lovers, if your cat were to give birth to a dog, boy, how disappointed would you be? You also would probably faint in fear, because that is unnatural to the created order of things. But we live in a time, and loved ones, I don't want you to hear any anger in this. There is brokenhearted sadness, where you will have affirmed in our day of enlightenment, with education exceeding any education that ever came before, with scientific discovery and ability going beyond any time or place in the history of the world, where there are those who positively affirm with intolerance towards anybody who disagrees that a man is actually a woman, and that a woman can actually be a man, and that a man can give birth to a child. This is a denial of the way God specifically created things to be. And to step away from these mooring truth, these anchoring truth, is to find ourselves unable to navigate through our world and through society in a way that is beneficial to society and helpful for ourselves. The Bible affirms that creation is specific. Genesis 1 also affirms that humans are God's special creation. We have been specifically created in that a man is not an orangutan, is not a chicken, is not a worm. We have a specific creation of our own, right? But there's something different about us that raises above the level of specifically being created. We are God's special creation. In verse 26 and 27, we have it shown for us. Then God said, "Let us make man and woman, mankind, in our image, after our likeness." How many of you love the animal kingdom? Love your cat. Be free with that. Love your dogs. How many of you think it would be awesome to get on one of those charter boats, go off the side of the country and watch the humpback whales jump out of the water and splash back in? Anybody else? I'd be thrilled by that. I think I'd be brought to tears by that. It is glorifying God in them existing as God created them. But loved ones, every child shares more beauty than every animal, because we bear the image and likeness of God. There is something about Joy and Susan that glorifies God in a way that exceeds the most beautiful tiger, the most impressive elephant, the most invisible creature in the depths of the ocean that lights its own way. All these things glorify God because they exist as they were created. But there is a way that you love will glorify God even more so than they. And to move ourselves away from that is to act in a way that is improper. And so we also can give him dishonor in a way that these animals never do. There's never been a wolf that dishonored God. But every human has at one point or another, because there's something special about us, and how we live with that special and uniqueness has something to say. The passage goes on, "And let them have dominion over the fish of the seas and over the birds of the heavens and over the livestock and over all the earth and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." So God created man in his own image. In his image, in the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. So what? What if we remove ourselves from this understanding? Much like our conclusion at the second affirmation, if nothing purposefully exists in specific form, there is no specific purpose or meaning to its present form. Humans inhale oxygen and they exhale carbon dioxide. The plant kingdom inhales carbon dioxide and it exhales, to use that language. There's an order there. Why do you think it is? Because God specifically created it to work that way. If there's nothing special about the image of God in humans, then we are simply one mammal among many mammals and possess no more value than anything else in all of creations. And loved ones, we're living in times that reject what is special in humanity. Three real quick observations. There is right now, within the California Assembly, a bill, California Assembly Bill 1881, that introduces a Bill of Rights for dogs and cats. I find that to be absurd. Absurd that it's necessary. Because those of us who have been specially created in the image of God ought to have an appreciation for things that have been created specifically by God. There ought not to be any cause to cut a hole in the law that protects animals from the cruelty of humanity, but there it is. It is a failure on our part to bear the image of God and to respect the creation of God that these types of bills exist. If you go to www.nonhumanrights.org, you will find that there is something called the Non-Human Rights Project, and they declare that they are the only civil rights organization in the United States dedicated solely to securing the rights of non-human animals. When you elevate animals to the same level of humans, you've done something nonsensical. But at the same time, the heart cry from this group is that humanity would rise up to their created being as those who've been created in the image of God, who rule over and who have dominion over and who care and who shepherd the rest of creation for its good and for its thriving. It's a shame. It is to our discredit that we don't image the one who created us in his image in the way we treat the world that we live in. And then finally this weekend, and I know some of you want me going to take the bypass here. You're going to want me to drive off the road and get a little bit angry or be a little bit softer than what I'm about to say feels. I'm just going to stay on the highway and let it last. Okay? This weekend, a biological man won 3 gold medals at the Ivy League's Women's Swimming and Diving Championship. The only explanation for that happening is that society in which we live in denies that there is a God who created things specifically and he created humans specially. This is what happens when we lose our minds. See, if we don't know who we are, if we don't know where we came from, we will not understand why we exist right now, and we will be left to make our decisions based on particular traits, personal desires, and our feelings. And things like this happen when we throw off our created or the created order as image bearers and we live our lives based on particular traits. Where did and where does human slavery come from? It came from rejecting the God who created all men and all women in his image. It is the de-imagification. There's a word for you. I just made it up. Somebody else has probably said it. But it is to remove the image of God of those who have been created expressly in the image of God. That's where it comes from. So there you go. Fourth affirmation. See how good I was? Some of you want me to lose my mind. And you go, amen, preach it, pastor. Some of you want me to be a little more gracious. I feel like as gracious as I could be right there. The fourth affirmation comes to us logically as well. Our final affirmation, Genesis chapter 1, is the goodness of God's original creation. In verse 4, in verse 10, in verse 12, in verse 18, in verse 21, and in verse 25, this was declared over what had been done in those days. It was good. God saw, and it was good. This is the repeated declaration over what had taken place. It was good. The observation, it was the concluding thought, it was the exclamation point to each of God's days of creation. It was good. The work of each particular day was good even of itself. It was good in its composition, inside and out. What God created was able to function, and so it was good. It was good in its design. Each portion of each day's creation pointed to a creator, a designer, and so it was good. Good in its purpose. Each part has a role to play. I am thankful for bushes and for trees and for grass because I like oxygen. And if they could say thank you for me for breathing carbon dioxide, I would let them say so. You're welcome. It's good in its purpose, each performing and living out as God had designed it. And let me say this, it was good as it was. Did not need improvement. The conclusion of the sixth day, looking on back on everything that he had made, God beheld in verse 31 concludes that it was very good. It was very good. So what? I want to say this. It wasn't just good at that moment. I want to say it is still very good. Every place where we see the image of God being born, it is very good. I remember when I was first saved, I was walking through the Sunday school wing of First Assembly of God in Des Moines, Iowa. And I'm sure probably every one of you has seen this poster. You might have printed it out on a printer someday, put it in your kid's nursery. But you saw this poster, and I saw it all over the Sunday school's wing, and it said this. It was a picture of a kid. I think there's probably been one with a picture of a cat. I don't know why. But the baby says this. I know I'm special because God don't make no junk. God doesn't make any junk. And loved ones, we have to be able to affirm that. We have to be able to affirm that in the lives of our children who are hearing contrary messages, that there's nothing particularly special about who you are in the way you are made. You will define what is special about you as you grow up. And if through the course of the years you decide to change your mind about what is special, then go ahead. But if special is fleeting based on our mood, based on those who we are around and what they want to hear come out of our mouths about us, then nothing is special about us. When our children come home from school and they have been taught confusing information about their biology, about their sexuality, about their gender, and they are unstable and confused, mother, father, tenderly pull them aside and affirm to them everything that is affirmed in the book of Genesis. Oh, buddy, sweetheart, know this. God created you. And boy, it's awesome what he did in you. As a boy, you image God. The Bible says he created them male. God created little boys to bear his image. And you're an image bearer. Sweetheart, God created little girls in such a way that they are the image of the God who created the universe and everything, and there is something unique and special about you that nobody else in the world bears. You have amongst you the ability to glorify God in the way that every other girl, but Susan, there's a way that you glorify your father in a way that Joy doesn't, even though you bear the last name. And there's a way that we have to affirm this. And this has to be anchored. And we can't be shamed into stepping back and making room for other understandings. We need to make room in our heart for people who have other understandings, because they too are blinded and deceived by the god of this world, and so they are ill-equipped to thrive. They find no joy in themselves as they have been born, as they have been created, and so they're trying to find a trait that has something worthy about it. They're trying to find an opinion that everybody in the world will give their applause to. They're trying to find a feeling and lean into the feelings, and every one of us knows that feelings are fleeting. It's important. But is it all of this, that there is a creator God, that creator God created things orderly with differentiated, that he created things specifically and special, that it is all good? Isn't this contrary to science? Yes? Shout me down. No, none of this is contrary to science. Not one word I have spoken is contrary to science in any way. Everything that the Bible affirms where it has bearing on science is true. And if scientists disagree, they are in error. And I don't have the time to go into it today, so I'm just going to make one statement, and I'm going to bring three items of support. It comes from junior high science. I think that's pretty much all of us have been through here, except for this young man right here. He's going to get there. God bless you. So here's the statement. Believing that God is a God of order, the early pioneers of scientific discovery set themselves to understanding, to the studying of God's creation. Believing that God was a God of order, early scientists set themselves to study God's creation, believing that they would find order in it, because the God who created it was orderly. Believing that they would grow in their understanding of it. Because since God is a God of order, he makes himself known in what he has created. Third, they increase their ability to interact with it. Because there are scientists, there are people who can amputate the legs of poor girls who are going to die if they don't, and secure for them a remaining life. An ability to interact with it, and that their understanding of God the Creator would expand in the process. Do you need a Bible verse? Romans chapter 1, verse 18 and 20. For what can be known about God is plain. Plain to them. Because God has shown them. For his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and his divine nature, have been clearly perceived. They have been seen in the order of creation ever since the creation of the world in the things that have been made. Supporting evidence? Well, I will tell you, in junior high science, I was taught about the water table. Anybody else? And they went through this. And there is this cycle from evaporation to condensation to precipitation to collection back to evaporation. Taking a look at the world that God created, early scientists said there's going to be an order here, and we're going to understand how God feeds the plants. And here it is. Additionally, physical science, learning about animals in the animal kingdom. Scientists are all about classification, right? They're all about differentiation, right? Kingdom, phylum, whatever that is. Class, order, family. I want to say genus, but it's genus. Species. And we understand that all that's a part of the animal kingdom is filed somewhere in here. And so that at the very bottom, you have plants and you have animals. And within the animal kingdom, you have dogs and you have cats and you have boys and girls. Boys and girls, the same beings, right? But everything in science is trying to blur these differences. But what you're taught in middle school, in the way every scientist works to understand the world, is to classify. And when they classify, they see what's different. It's exhausting. How absurd the times in which we are living. Finally, I was taught biology, about the systems of the body, the nervous system. Some of us have more active nervous system than others. The digestive system. Some of us have less active digestive systems than others. Circulatory system, right? The skeletal system. the endocrine system, which, believe me, if the lion's chasing you down, you want that sucker working, is what we have said today contrary to science? Not at all. It congruous with what we were taught in middle school and what has been advanced through high school, through undergraduate, through postgraduate degrees. It just, for some reason, there are people who stand on the shoulders of all this education and, contrary to what they actually believe, will make conclusions that are in the exact opposite direction of what they know. All of these things, all of our understanding of science, are the result of scientists looking for the fingerprints of God in creation and finding them. Loved ones, I can't exaggerate the importance of these affirmations. And so my prayer is that we will all embrace them with our head, with our hearts, and with our hands. With our head, my prayer is that you will give yourself to reviewing this information over and over and over by opening up in Genesis and reading through it from time to time to anchor yourself in what is true. And so that you come to the place where you are able to, without shame and without apology, affirm that these things are true. But Pastor Brian, I'm not a doctorate. No, you're not. But there's not a doctor in this world who has the understanding that Creator God has. And He has shown Himself to be a God of order, a God who creates specifically and specially, a God who created well, a God who in everything that He created there was an order to it so that we understand. I want you to find a peace and an understanding in your mind where you can affirm these things without shame. Heart, I don't want you just to be able to say, this is right. I want you to be able to joyfully say, it's right. And to be able to sit your child down when they come home from school with contrary news, with a smile on your face and a melody in the way you speak, talk about the beauties of God's creation specifically in the way God created you, Bren, God created you, Zach, as you've done. Not just they're wrong and we're right, but they have joy. God did this, and boy, is it good. And you're the proof of the pudding. And then with hand, and I kind of just drifted off into that, with discipline, I want you to study these things so that you're able to teach them as being true, maybe not in their entirety, maybe not with the ability to field and answer every question and to engage with every what if, but so that you aren't backed away in shame and you'll be able to say, that's a pretty good question. You know, that's a really good question. I don't know the specific answer to that, but I know these things are true, and I'm going to ask for your permission to go look into these things a little bit deeper so that I can bring to you an answer that satisfies me. Whether it'll answer satisfy you or not, I'll never be able to say. But I'm going to satisfy myself on this one because that's a good question. And again, here it is, a special word to parents. Be vigilant over your kids. Understand that for many of them, if they spend the majority of their lives in public school recently, that there is a man, a biological man, who won 3 gold medals over the weekend in the Women's Ivy League Swimming and Diving Championship. It makes complete sense to them. There's, within their mind, there's no conflict. There's nothing about that that is incongruous. You have to understand that this is the pervasive understanding of those who are, many of those who are in positions of authority. It's not every teacher. We need to make sure with this atmosphere that's going on that we don't position ourselves oppositionally against every teacher in public school and every administrator in public school. And everybody who's involved in teaching unions. It's easy to ripe everybody into some evil snowball when loved ones, if it was 100% evil snowball, boy, the wreckage that would be done that still isn't done, because God has his people in those places as salt and as light. Pray for those who are in public school, even if you're sending your kid to private school. Pray for those who are in public school and private school, even if you homeschool kids in your own home and you have full 100% control of your content. But do not back away from sitting your child down and talking about the glorious God of Genesis chapter 1, because it is for their good, and this country and our world needs it.